which is to the east and a little bit south. So flying into Kenya first, and then I'm spending a day there to get myself sorted. And then I fly from Kenya into Juba, which is the capital city of South Sudan, down at the bottom, which is still quite a long way from Renk. When I first found out about Renk, I thought, let's just see how long it takes to get there. I'll Google Maps it, see how long it takes to drive. It's a 29-hour drive that mostly goes up through Sudan and round the edges because you just can't drive across the country. So to get to Renk, I'm going to have to get another airplane, but none of the big airlines go there. So an organization called MAF, the Mission Aviation Fellowship, they're a Christian organization, and they fly. Their mission is to help fly charity workers, missionaries, various people around a lot of the time in Africa to places that are inaccessible by road, that you can't drive there. So it will probably be an MAF flight that I will then get in one of those tiny little planes, like you saw at the beginning of the video, to get me up to Renk.
We'd like to know what kind of toilet you're going to have and other things like that about your house. Will you have, like, internet or running water or electricity or that kind of stuff?
So the house that I'm living in doesn't have running water. So there are no flushing toilets. The toilets are called long drops. It kind of explains itself, all right? It's basically just a hole. There won't be showers. We will have buckets, so we'll have to use buckets to wash. We do have electricity where we're living. A lot of South Sudan doesn't have electricity, particularly out in the villages where a lot of the people live. But where we're based, we will have electricity. It's not the most reliable. It might cut out for a week or so. And when we're working out in the health clinics, you could see some of them, or probably couldn't see them very well because they were dark. So there's not electricity out in the villages, and we work by head torch and by someone else holding a light for us when we're out there. There is some internet access in our house. Again, it's something that's not accessible to everybody in South Sudan, but it's essential for us to have access to the internet to keep safe and to be able to do our job well. Again, it's not necessarily the best internet, and if the electricity goes down, then there won't be any internet for however long it takes for the electricity to come back on.
Okay, we'll pause on questions there, but do come and speak to Laura if you've got any other questions. And do you know, this is how this picture here is a picture of a vision that someone had quite a long time ago about how we do church. And we send out these boats, and these boats go in different places, bringing the love and the kindness and the message of Jesus. So Laura is going on one of these boats. She's sort of launching out with a new boat. And do you remember how when the Davies family were in South Africa a year or so ago, we all joined in and sent some Christmas presents, didn't we, to the children that they were living with? And last year, Sarah was over in Kenya, Fungano Island, and we sent some Christmas gifts to the children living over there. Well, you've had some good time to hear from Laura. You can chat with her some more after the service. But be thinking about how, as you see in the picture here, we got the children are really involved, and they're, I think in the vision that this lady Anna had before this was painted, was of the children making special treats and putting them into the boats to send. So often on the soup run that goes out on a Wednesday, children will make cakes and things. And for the night shelter that we had, another one of our boats, children were making cakes and things for the guests in the night shelter. So we're going to be, adults will be hearing a bit more from Laura in a minute. But let's see this as Laura going, and we're sending her from here with our love and our blessing. And so if you've got any more questions, guys, you want to ask her, then do, okay? Thanks, Laura. Laura will be back and share a bit more shortly. Laura's going to tell us now a bit more about her story.
Hi. So Chris and Alice have asked me to share a little bit about my journey leading up to this point of going to South Sudan. I was very lucky to grow up in a Christian family where I felt secure and loved. I was given everything that I needed. I grew up actually the vicar's daughter, so going to church every Sunday, generally knew the answers at Sunday school, but actually probably lived probably more in the shadow of my parents' faith more than having a living faith of my own for a lot of that time. As an older teenager, I started to kind of question these things a little bit more for myself, and went to Malawi in Africa as well for for 4 months. And in that time there, I found myself having to trust these words in the Bible in a way that I'd never trusted before. And yes, Malawi is a very stable African country. It's very entirely different to going to South Sudan. But actually for me, that was a really significant moment in my walk with the Lord. You know, in trusting the Lord when he says that he will provide when you need it. I've generally been quite a self-reliant, quite independent kind of person through my life. And that is one of my ongoing battles, is learning to, you know, trust the Lord and lean not on my own understanding. And yes, my time there was significant in many ways in learning to actually trust God when I needed him and that he would come through. But it also really, opened my eyes to living life the way God calls us to, in the sense of that verse in Micah. I think that was probably one of the first times when I was out there that I really kind of read or dwelt on that verse. And I can remember really clearly sitting on a wall, the place that we were living, in the long way in Malawi, and just dwelling on that verse. And it just suddenly seemed in some ways quite simple. Like, this is what God requires of us. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated, but yeah, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with him in all that we do. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy, but somehow the simplicity and not needing to overcomplicate or overanalyze things just kind of sank in for me during that time. And that experience in Malawi also really, there was a stirring in me for wanting to work, to be in, potentially in Africa, but also kind of working where I could see hope restored and bringing real change where it's needed. Yet at the same time, while I was there, I was very aware that actually I went out there as a young person with not a lot of experience and not many kind of skills to give at that point. And I felt that I probably gained far more personally from that experience than I gave out in what I did while I was there. So I said to the Lord, when I came back, I said, right, I feel like there is something about going to Africa with you at some point in my life, but I don't want to make that happen by myself. I don't want that to be something that I've orchestrated, that I'm going to do something that isn't necessary, you know, that I'm just going and doing it when actually someone local could have done that instead. So I said, I'm not going to go back unless there's an opportunity for me to give or to serve in a way that's really needed. So it was 2004, that was in Malawi, so that was 15 years ago. So it has been a journey over that 15 years of waiting and trusting the Lord in that. And there are a number of kind of different phases in life where I explored different options of trying to do that. I spent some time working with an inner city youth work project where we literally moved into the council estates, kind of lived in the community and worked alongside the churches and some of the really vulnerable young children there and young people, really. That was challenging in a very different way. I also worked in an event management company, so organising conferences for churches. And in that kind of period where I was doing this youth work and working in this company, I was still longing to be back in Africa. I didn't know how that was or where that would be, but I knew that it wasn't time. And then there came a phase just as I was turning 25, where actually everything that was kind of in place in my life kind of fell out of it. So that mission opportunity in a city, that came to an end. I was at that time planning to get married. That relationship came to an end. My career that I was doing in event management, I realized that actually that was just draining me of life. That was not the right place for me to be. And I came to this kind of, little point, mid-20s crisis of, okay, what's my life about, Lord? Like, what do I do? How do I serve you? Who am I? Where am I supposed to be? And again, there was always in the back of my mind, I'd love to be in Africa. but I didn't know where. I didn't still feel like I had skills or anything useful that I could do, that I felt called to do yet. So it's still, even though that was a point in life where I reevaluated things, it still wasn't the right time to go. But in that journey, I again learnt to know more of the Lord, more of myself, of who I am, of my identity being in Him. And yeah, through that really rough year or so, I just felt the Lord's real tangible presence and love with me, guiding me in the next step. And that next step was to retrain as a midwife. My mum was a midwife, and as a teenager, I thought that sounded like a horrendous job and said that was something I would never do. So I had to swallow my words, and I went to train as a midwife in Lincoln. And whilst I was there, I met a guy who was about to go work for Medair. And I'd never heard of Medair. They are a Christian humanitarian aid organization. Their kind of goal, their mission is to go to the areas of most need, to the people who are most difficult to get to, who are most isolated, most in need, to come alongside those people and with dignity and integrity help them regain what is needed in their lives. And the aim of Medair really is to do itself out of a job so that you aren't creating dependence, but you're helping people get back on their feet to carry on that work for themselves, and then Medair can leave. And so I'd not heard of them. I looked them up, and I remember just seeing something on their website about their values. So their key values are hope, dignity, integrity, accountability, compassion, and faith. And as I just read through, my heart was pounding, and I could just, you know, it felt like it really aligned with how I felt I wanted to live my life and what I wanted to do. But at the time, I think I was a first, second-year student midwife. So whilst I was gaining skills that might be very useful, I didn't yet have them. So I remember saying to this guy as he went off to Medair, I said, don't forget me, because in 5 years' time, I'm going to ask you to put a good word in for me. So as I trained, that, again, was a period of waiting. It was not an easy time, both in personal life and in the role that I was doing as a student midwife was hard work. Many times felt frustrating because I knew God had these promises for me. I still had this desire to be somewhere in Africa, but I wasn't yet. I still had to train. And then when I qualified, I had some of those skills, but I didn't have experience. It still wasn't time to go. I still had to trust that the Lord would bring things around in the right time. So I moved to Bristol 3 years ago and got a job as a midwife at Southmead. And I've loved being in Bristol. I came to Hope my very first Sunday. As I walked through the door my very first Sunday, Lucy Daniels, who's not here, came in, bumped into me literally in the door and said, oh, I don't know you. Are you new? And I said, yeah. And she said, you're new to Bristol? I said, yes, I moved yesterday. And she kind of grabbed my hand, brought me in, introduced me to people. This place has felt very much like home ever since. And I've loved being in Bristol. I've loved being part of Hope. About a year and a half ago, I went through another period in life where, things weren't great. Family life, various kind of personal events had happened, and it left me really rocked. It was a really pretty low time. And as I came out of that, I remember saying to God, okay, well, I told you I was waiting until I had useful skills. I told you I was waiting until I had the experience to go. I've realized that actually I'm the one who's been putting it off for a couple of years now. Because in my head, I always pictured going out there married. I always thought I would meet someone, we get married, we go do that together. And as much as I say that, yes, I am a feminist, and I don't think that your life revolves around getting married and life will be happy ever after that. But there was part of me still that in the midst of that actually had this little hang-up that I had a caveat that I'd said to God I would go do that once I'd got married. And then this kind of little post-crisis phase, I just had this moment of, actually, Lord, why have I thought that? Actually, if you're calling me to go somewhere, if you're telling me to go, then who can protect me or journey with me more than you? And I realized there was something in me that realized, okay, actually, I've talked about this for a long time. It's daunting, but actually I need to go for it. And so I went through a phase last year of stepping out a bit more and kind of pushing boundaries, exploring more things. And part of that included applying to Medair. But actually, leading up to applying to Medair, I'd been going through this process and hadn't yet applied. I came to Hope on Sunday, and someone sat down next to me who's now a member of Hope and not here today, but they were kind of just visiting Hope at that point, and said hello, asked if I went here. The next question was, so what's your vision then? And before I could say anything, she said, it's not Bristol, is it? I said, no. She said, it's not in the UK, is it? And I said, no. And she just had, some really inspiring words from God for me at that point. And she said, you know what, I felt like maybe the reason I came here today was because God wanted me to tell you to go. And she didn't know that I'd been starting to mull over that stuff about Medair, or going to Africa. And it was just a real kind of God moment of, okay, Lord, this is quite big and daunting, and I'm doing this on my own with you, but okay, I'm going to step up and take that step. And that was a lot to process and take in. And so I'm a journaler. I write things down. I process things outwardly. I journal. So I went to find my favorite coffee shop. This is about a week or two later, and sit down and do some journaling. And my favorite coffee shop was full. So I had a little moment of, oh gosh, where do I go? I'd pictured sitting in this lovely place. I can't go there. So I thought somewhere else. I went there and they'd refurbished and the door had moved and I knew it was open, but I couldn't figure out how to get into this place. And I had a little moment of, I don't want to look like an idiot, so I'll go somewhere else. And I ended up standing just on the edge of Clifton, kind of looking down over Hot Wells, really sunny day, and kind of speaking to the Lord about, all right, okay, I think I need to be applying to Medair now. And this gentleman came up to me, started talking to me. He said he was in his 80s. He had a little lanyard around his neck. Never saw what organization he was from, but I wish I had. And he just started telling me about his life, about how he had lived and worked in many places around the world, how he still kind of traveled a lot, even though he didn't have much money. He saved up every day, and that was what he felt gave him life. And I think I was a bit frustrated as well. Like I was in my, I am kind of in my early 30s still. And most of my friends were married, were raising children. And, you know, my life wasn't quite the way that I thought it might be by that point. And he just looked at me whilst I was kind of thinking, oh gosh, you don't know how much I really want to be traveling abroad, working abroad, doing something similar to what you've been doing. So my heart was pounding already. And he looked at me and he said, how old are you? And I said, oh, I'm 32. I said, are you married? I said, no. Said, have you got kids? I said, no. And he said, just go. This is a stranger in the street. He just said, just go. My life started at 35 when I moved abroad. Just do it. It will be the most important decision that you take. And I don't know about anybody else, but I grew up with parents who read Guidepost, which is like a Christian magazine. And I think it was Christian magazine. And it would have like little inspiring stories in it. And there was one about a family who invited a stranger from church back to lunch. They took a photo because it was an amazing lunch all together. And then when they developed their photos, the stranger wasn't in it. And they thought it was an angel. And so I was like, oh gosh, is this man an angel? Like I feel like he's giving me a message direct from God. He's a stranger. So as he walked away, I did take a picture of him from behind, like just to see if it would develop. But you know, technology's changed since the days of Guidepost. And so they might not appear in film, but he did appear on my phone. So you know, whether he was an angel or not, I felt like he was giving me a message from God. So I went home that afternoon and I sat down and I applied, for the kind of selection course with Medair. So that was the beginning of last year. It took quite a while for me to hear anything back and I was kind of losing a bit of hope. but in the middle of November, I got an email from them saying that they would like me to attend their selection course in Switzerland in 2 weeks' time. I happened to be able to go. It's quite difficult getting your shifts swapped at short notice, but I had that week off. And so I went over for their selection course. And whilst I was there, it was really, really evident to me that God had brought me there. And that at that point, all the times leading up in my life before where I'd questioned and gone, oh, Lord, why am I waiting? It feels like life is on hold. Like, what's this about? Why did I have to go through that experience? Why did I have to go through that? Through this kind of selection week, I just felt so clearly the Lord saying, well, you did this for this purpose, and now you have those skills. You went through this for this purpose, and now you have these characteristics. You went through this, and now you have this strength. And I just really clearly felt a sense of my life being guided by the Lord and that everything had gone before, be the good or the bad, the Lord had been walking through that with me and that this was the next step to take, no matter how daunting it might feel, that actually, yes, I am now going to step away from the NHS. I'm going to follow wherever you take me And I think that's probably with Medair. So a week after the course, so that's 3 weeks after I got that first email, I got another email saying, you've passed the course. We would love you to work with Medair. There's a job in South Sudan that we'd like you to interview for, and we think it would really suit you. And so just before Christmas, I interviewed for the job with in South Sudan. That's it. I've now got this role in South Sudan. I go out in, not this Thursday coming, the Thursday after I fly to Nairobi, and a couple of days later fly to Juba. And then at some point after that, we'll fly up to Renk, which is the kind of rural town in the north of South Sudan where I'll be based. I can see through these recent years, recent months, how the Lord has been walking through me, has been through me as I've been walking through those different phases of life. And it's not that it's been easy, and it's not that I feel really confident that I'm going to go and be amazing in South Sudan, because I know it's not my strength. Like, I know that this is something entirely different. Like, yes, I have skills that I can give now. And I'm going to be doing a health management role, working alongside local healthcare staff, empowering them, training them. But I also know it's a very different environment, and I know that I do have to completely lean on the Lord and lean on his wisdom and his guidance as I go forward and do that. So that is kind of my journey leading up to this point. I don't know what else you want to know.
So proud of you, Laura. It's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. We just believe that God's got good works of faith in advance for every one of us to do. And so what we'd love to do now is have some people praying for Laura to send her out, and others to discuss round your tables this verse, asking the Holy Spirit to make it pertinent. There may be some of us here who know absolutely this is the thing that God's given for me. It's maybe my life journey or my season. But others of us, we might not be in that place that Laura is of inhabiting it, of beginning to inhabit it, but there's nothing like it on earth. And in Isaiah 58, it says, if you pour out, your healing quickly appears. And there's something about our wholeness and our restoration that comes from finding the thing we're designed to do. So if anyone is particularly kind of blessed or touched, I mean, I'm sure we all are in so many ways by what Laura said, are we inviting, please let her come up here and we'll be praying for Laura. And otherwise, do stay at your tables and discuss where you think you are with that verse. And maybe some of Laura's life was quite interesting. There were different seasons, weren't there, of some quite sort of harrowing, some difficult, some encouraging, some moving, you know, different seasons, maybe to connect with where you're at with those seasons as well. So do come up if any of you feel particularly inspired to pray for Laura and prophesy over her and send her out. That would be fantastic.